Good Show on Sports at 5.9 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus. No Benny this week. Vacation. But no rest for Justin Bourne, who, word on the street, is doing 3 hours of Hockey Central, or 2 hours of Hockey Central today. Not his normal shift. What's up, buddy?
Not much, man. Not much. I'm excited to be here with you. I have no idea what we're going to talk about today, which is the way I like it, because we usually have our best conversations before we get to the air, so it's good.
Yeah, I didn't really need to text you about the stuff I wanted to talk about, because you wrote about a bunch of the things that I want to hit on. And that's just...
Great.
We haven't really talked since the NHL finalized this format, right? Like, off-air, right. On-air, you just... Two ships passing the night, bud. So, I read your piece that's up on... on sportsnet.ca. It's 10 reactions. First of all, I love a shot at Elliot Friedman. This show does the same thing. We've banned Elliot from our show. It's not that he does all the other shows. It's not that it's that he prioritizes the ones with, say, bigger audiences. It's that we ban him. That's what it exactly is. And sometimes we temporarily lift the ban if he is so, like, you know, sometimes we try to make it.
Yeah.
So, love the column. But yeah, wanted to just talk to you today about things that I think we're going to see moving forward and things that we like about this format and things that we already did the things that we don't, right? Which is that the play-in game should be weighted. It seems like an easy layup, and for whatever reason, they didn't want to do it. They just thought that it was gimmicky, even though, listen, they're already play-in games. So,
right.
I'm not really sure. And as you pointed out, like, what happens with these statistics? You guys already did that on Hockey Central, but it's like, if you have a format that includes a portion that statistics essentially go out the window and don't exist, like, we have a third category now, like, you go to a hockey reference page and it's going to be regular season, playoffs, and play-in game stats, like, it's weird. So, So who cares? Just wait the series. But... let's just start with this. What do you like the most about the format? What, like, when you look at this thing, what do you think is the best idea from it that we're going to see move forward?
Yeah, there are things to like for sure. Certainly the idea that that we're coming back is the very basic concept that would be fun. But I like the idea in a sport with so much parity of having some sort of play-in game. So basically, to me, if you finish in the NHL in 14th place or 18th place, you're the same team. Like, yeah, all right, you're at the top of the league, you're great, you're at the bottom of the league, you're garbage. Basically, between 10 and 20, I can't tell the difference. So once we're at 14 to 18, you have these heartbreaking stories of teams missing playoffs by a point and their fans have never had a chance to be in it, and all of a sudden they're just like, they tune out for the year. It would be really fun to have a 7-10-8 versus 9 play-in. So I think baseball has had some success with it, and I've kind of changed my tune since Benny gave me a talking to last week about the play-in idea. I think there's merit there. I also think then, if you're a fan of a team in 22nd place in March, you're not just saying, well, let's lose every game and get to the lottery as best we can. You're saying, boy, if we can climb the standings a few spots, we might have a crack at a play-in game, and then who knows? So I think there might be some merit to giving more teams hope later in the season.
No, I love it, and I really... I'm kind of against added games for baseball because the regular season still has meaning, right? Like, it actually is a sport where it's such a grind, and... it's similar to hockey in that, hey, anybody could win a short series because, much like goaltending, there's pitching. So we've talked about this with the Blue Jays. If the Blue Jays somehow got in some expanded playoff format, there's no reason to believe that if they had a Nate Pearson is some semblance of what we think he's going to be, and Hyunjin Ryu at the top of your rotation, that you can't steal two games with those guys. Right? And it goes the same thing as to why people are afraid of Carey Price, why the Pittsburgh Penguins are like, not so into Carey Price. I just don't think that you can value the regular season in hockey the same way anymore. And I think that the NBA is probably going to deal with something pretty similar, which is, hey, we have load management, we have all these different things. No one really cares as much about our game on a Tuesday night, so why don't we just shorten the season up, make sure that the regular season means more because more teams can get in and you avoid tanking. You have fresher athletes as they approach the most important part of the season. Like, some of the best things about this break, the only real positive I'm going to take away from this is that it allowed teams to get healthy, right? Like, no one has an asterisk. The Leafs are missing Andreas Janssen. Who's the most consequential player on one of the playoff teams that they're just not going to have? Like, yeah. It's pretty loaded.
So it is. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, so you've got fresh teams. you've got an expanded playoffs with a bunch of different groups, though, so all these different markets are engaged. I don't see how this doesn't happen moving forward, and I don't really think people are going to look at it and say, hey, this now feels weird, this feels like cheap, even when a team wins one of these things. My question is that what do you do with the regular season? Because we still do – let's put it this way. Do we still care about records? Like, how do you think that modern-day sports fans feel about all-time records and comparing them to athletes of the past? Because I feel like Alex Ovechkin, for example, he would be the biggest one where we say, well, Ovi needs to have a chance to pass Gretzky, that – we're going to have the debate about whether Alex Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer of all time regardless. I'm sure it means a lot to him, but that we already put things in numbers in context anyways, that maybe stat chasing doesn't mean the same thing to modern-day sports fans as it used to.
No, that's true. So as you're talking about that, I was just thinking about so baseball, remind me, what percentage of baseball teams make playoffs or qualify for a play-in game even? What's it? Do you know offhand?
I don't know percentages because I'm not good at math. Yeah. I don't even appreciate the way that you put that to me. Like, I think that's actually pretty rude to be like, hey, what percentage? Teams make the playoffs. That's what I'll tell you.
Yes. Okay. So, and there's 162 games in baseball. So there are many death marches in baseball that start with 100 games left in the season. You'll see a team that knows they're not going to play in playoffs and they have to play out like 100 games. But it doesn't hurt the quality of games they play in because in baseball, you are asked to, you have, let's say, 4 at-bats or 5 at-bats, and your personal stats are on the line in those moments. You go up there, you play for your, you work hard for that minute you're at the plate or whatever, and that's, you know, it's not hard to do. In hockey, the league is greatly incentivized to keep teams and players motivated at all times because there's no defining moment where, or a few defining moments where you're at the plate. Like, you're on the ice for 20 minutes a game. You're never really the focus of attention unless you want to be. You need players motivated. We see it in playoffs that players have the ability in hockey to play harder, to give more effort, to play at a different degree. So I think that hockey teams on death marches are a lot worse to watch than baseball teams on death marches, and it makes more sense for hockey to find a way to have a bigger play-in and keep more teams interested to keep the quality of the games high later in the season because, like I said, unless players are motivated and have reason to put the pedal down, it's easier to get through a hockey game without doing anything really effective or noticeable because you don't have the defined moments where you have to try.
Well, plus if you're leaning into parity, right? If this is going to be the thing, if this is going to be the NHL's, let's just say their brand moving forward, is that everybody has a chance, everybody, you get in and you win and we have, okay, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of parity, but then lean into it because if you have your bottom, you know, 5, 6, 7 teams that aren't going to be making a play-in format, then cool, they're all going to have, I assume at some point, increased lottery chances, right? But they're also going to have to go against a couple of these teams. Like, this is like, I feel like they almost sort of fixed the lottery with this as well, where I don't like the fact that a play-in team is going to know whether or not they, if they lose, they could be out.
I don't either.
I think that is the one glitch that they really, I don't even know how that happened. I don't know why they thought, hey, this is actually a pretty good idea. Like, just wait to do the lottery until the teams are out of the first round. Like, doesn't that make more sense?
It's like, we knew that we had delicious gelato for dessert in my house last night, and my son like just couldn't wait to have it. And I was like, "If you wait, you still get to eat it. You get to eat it like at a better time." And it's like, "No. He's got to eat half of it now. And by the time you get to the other half for dessert, now you have a half dessert." It's the NHL can't wait. They're trying to give this dessert to their fans that they're going to have a draft lottery when it only makes sense to wait 1 month until the play-in games are done.
Yeah, I think it's just that they're so starved for content that they needed to put something on the calendar, but it's rarely a good idea, I should say, when you just rush something for the sake of, well, we need something to do. Well, you know what? Get creative, figure out something else. Like, just do anything other than diminish your product or make it feel
Bettman talks on TV. Have Bettman talk on TV. The second Bettman had the event the other day to announce something, he could have said anything. I set my dial. Bettman's got something to say. Let's go. You could have Bettman does fireside chat once a week, and I'm listening.
Yeah, I love that when Bettman does those, and then he has to just prepare himself to do a bunch of different shows and get ready for a bunch of different questions, and he's just like, I'm going to answer all of these things. I'm not going to let you in on this. Like, I don't know if there's anybody that's better at avoiding but also kind of half answering a question than Gary Bettman. So. Yeah, I don't really like.
I will say it's incredible. They're like, it'll be like, hey, you get Bettman for 15 minutes, and then you ask a question. Bettman give you a 9-minute answer, and you're like, I see. Yeah, no, I see.
It's very well done. It's very well done. Yeah, I don't like the play-in thing. It's not like players. My reason for it is it's not as though someone on the Leafs they're gonna say, hey guys, hey Matthews, wouldn't you like potentially you could be the Lafreniere team, and he's gonna say, oh, you know, maybe I'm not gonna skate as hard on this shift. It's just more the idea of I think those are just annoying fan base conversations that people have where all of a sudden you're not fully rooting for your team and you're not invested in them trying to get past. Like that just sucks. And that's the whole point of limiting
the
fans. Right. It's just a stupid thing for people. That's what I hate is that there's going to be Twitter conversations where if you're a Habs fan, instead of feeling lucky that you got into the postseason, if one of the teams, if all of a sudden you're looking at the playoff seeding and saying, or sorry, the lottery seeding, and it's one of the play-in teams that has a top three pick, you're going to have Habs fans divided on Twitter, yelling at each other, calling each other idiots if they want to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins, saying, well, we can't win a Stanley Cup anyway, so we might as well go down and improve our team, and that just sucks. That diminishes what you're trying to do, which is, hey, we have a parity league where everybody can win, and you should be cheering for your team to try and win.
The NHL has put themselves in a position where they so badly need all three of the top three picks to come from the bottom seven who aren't in the play-in. They need it. You know, for the good of the investment of the fans in those play-in series and for general conversations about it, because there's a possibility that two placeholder cards get pulled. And, you know, I had the dumbassery idea of asking Mark Bergevin if two tickets get pulled from placeholder teams, will he root for his team to lose? And he was just like, I will punch my big biceps through the back of your skull if you ever say anything so dumb again. So I learned my lesson.
It's not
there,
that it's even a dumb question that he would consider it. It's a dumb question to put him on a public platform and say, hey, Mark, you know, you've been a professional athlete and now a competitor for your entire life. What do you think about not competing? Do you like losing for potential picks? He's like, and will you say it on radio so that it haunts you forever, sir? The floor is yours.
Literally, I was like, would you like to say something that will probably get you fired? Like, what a dumb question to ask as soon as I said it. Well, I didn't want to phrase it that way. I was trying to be like, would part of you think that maybe I was just hedging it and it just came out like an idiot?
Yeah. So, I just think that what they have here is the future. It's just the way to keep people way more engaged. It's the way to lean into your parity. I think that the reseeding idea is really smart, that this is actually one way to counter it and one way to give teams advantages is just to say, hey, if you do have the best regular season record, you're going to face the worst of the opponents. You're going to face the teams that have the worst records. You got to get rid of bracketing. Honestly, this is the best part about this, is that the stuff that you had going on, this whole thing about all the divisions trying to face each other for rivalries, hockey didn't need that. Like, rivalries happen organically. You trying to force them in and say, like, this is now... The Leafs have played the Bruins twice in a row. Does it really feel like a rivalry? Honestly, I know that the Leafs have lost all three of these series that they've played in the last decade, but does it really feel like a rivalry? Does a Leaf fan feel like, oh, wow, like I'm getting up for this Boston game so much differently than some of the other ones against Canadian teams that they haven't faced in the playoffs?
The old Harlem Globetrotters-Washington Generals rivalry that goes back decades.
I don't think it's worked. I don't think that all of a sudden they have all these teams that, oh, wow. The only place where it looked like finally it was going to pay off was with the potential for a Battle of Alberta, right? That was it, where they said, okay, well, man, if we get Flames Oilers in the first round, that's going to be probably the main event of the entire Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, that's going to be the very best thing that's going to happen early on. I just think that you want to try and incentivize your best teams being later in the postseason, and the best way to do that is with reseeding, and the fairest way to do that is with reseeding, especially if you're going to add teams. So I'm really into that. I'm really into adding those playoff teams. But yeah, just have it so that you have 24 teams that are in, and then when Seattle shows up, you have 8 teams who are on the outside, and that those 8 teams all have equal lottery odds to make sure that there's no extra tanking, but that every single one of those teams, again, parity, fairness, parity, all 8 of you have the exact same odds to win the first overall pick, And you go into that, and who's not going to try to win moving forward like that?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I agree. The bracketing thing was, you know, when they first went back to the whole, like, divisional playoff rounds, I got the logic, but it's unbelievable how ineffective it was at giving us rivalries. Like, the Islanders and Rangers, like, it was like, okay, mm-hmm. Isles, Rangers, could be Leafs, Habs, could be Battle of Alberta, could be... We got none of it over, like, I don't know how many years it's been. The reality is, with that, is that you've been punishing good teams, making them go through, you know, better teams sooner. It's been bad for the league. I know they say they do it for travel, but, like, you travel, you know, all season long, and if you have to fly 2 hours, who cares if it's three or four to get where you're going to play, you know, an easier opponent and let the better teams have a better chance. So I've always been pro reseeding.
Do you think that home ice matters? Like, to what extent do you think that it actually matters? Because Leaf fans would tell you, oh my God, it matters the most, because the whole thing is that they don't have to go into Boston. If they were to play Boston, I've heard this take from many people. Hey, I'm not even afraid of the Bruins now if the Leafs get in, because, yeah, as long as they don't have to go into that building with those ghosts, they don't have to do it. So there's certainly things where you don't feel as confident going on the road, but, yeah, you just look at the numbers of the way it is. It's pretty close to 50-50. Like, what if we find out that that's actually not that big of a deal here, and we get a little bit more of a chalky Stanley Cup playoffs, and the way that they try to address those things and say, okay, while we do have parity, this could actually be the gateway to the weighted playoff series.
Yeah, the home ice advantage thing in hockey is, like, I almost want to find a way for them to better, you know, give the home team a better advantage. Like, I love coming to you for, like, really obscure things. Hey, JD, what's the percentage of, you know, the NBA's home winning percentage? But really, in basketball, the home team wins, what, 60, 65% of the games? It's got to be that high.
But we're seeing,
we're
seeing in football, though, there's some markets that do it. But generally, it's like good teams win at home. But if you're close, if it's two good teams playing each other, home advantage is not even worth the 3 points that Vegas tends to give it. That it's actually becoming way more neutral than we've ever seen before. And hockey is the same way.
Well, in hockey, the reality is that the advantages are not that great in terms of what you gain in-game. The last change thing is something that coaches tell themselves matters a lot, but often they have their line matchups wrong anyway. So I think
I
it's like
a 51
for 50.
I was just going to say, sometimes I feel like it hurts them. It hurts them more, right? Like, you get obsessed with the idea that you have to have the last change, and it completely screws up your bench, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now your fans are pissed because they're like, why is this group out against here? Like, I was thinking about that in terms of how they're going to do Taves versus Dreisaitl and McDavid, and how if you're Chicago and if you're a Chicago fan, McDavid's going to score, right? Or Dreisaitl's going to score. And your fan base is just going to be like, well, why didn't we use Taves against whichever line doesn't work? There's going to be a huge portion of your fan base that's pissed off about it.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's impossible to win, but with home ice and hockey, it doesn't make a huge difference. You know, this whole neutral site thing is going to be interesting to see how it plays out for the teams, but I do think that there should be some way that home ice is worth more for NHL teams, because I like the idea that when you're home, it's a big advantage for whatever reason. It's not right now in the NHL.
Yeah, I really do wonder if the only pushback from players in the league is going to be the history of the game argument, that We're changing this sport too immensely. Because to me, the format would be, hey, go down to 68 games. You know, like, lop off a significant portion of your regular season.
Berkey wants that too.
Right. Lop off a bunch of your regular season. And, all right, how are we going to make up for the lost gate? Well, ticket prices are going to cost more. So, first of all, you're going to make some up when people do want to go back. And let's be honest, we don't know how long that's going to be anyways. So, the more you reinforce your television product, I think the better off you are at this point. So, you're going to increase ticket prices. That's going to be a natural thing that's going to happen. You're going to have to do it because you're going to have fewer gates. But then you also have more teams that are going to be able to get some playoff revenue, right? So, I feel like at least some way they're going to be able to do this. The other part of it is that you just got the expansion fee from Seattle, so everybody is sitting on a little bit of extra money at this point in time. So you're like, okay, we at least have something to back a little bit of this. Get rid of it. Go down to 68 games. Have the 24 teams in. Have 8 teams who are out. Let those 8 teams have the equal odds. Again, league of parity, league of fairness. Have the play-in games. Just weight the play-in games so that the teams that have to face them at the top, that they actually have an advantage. And the closer you get to the middle, there is no advantage. So if you're the 8 versus the 9 seed thing happening, that you don't really have a weighted series. You just get one if it's 5 versus 12. If you're the Penguins and you're playing the Habs, you got to win 2 of the 5 games, and if you're the other team, you got to win 3. Okay, pretty easy concept to get behind. It's just like I said, do people care about records? Because I think it was a big thing when we were growing up. I think you really cared about regular season awards and what it meant. And like you pointed out in the piece, right, that Ovi's going to add this Rocket Richard trophy, but that he's not going to have to go down the stretch run. And for the first couple of years, you'll probably always have the questions if you lop off regular season games of would player X have been able to catch up in a normal season? And how much does it diminish player X's legacy if at the end of the day, they end up, you know, especially someone who's coming in the league right now, a rookie that's coming in the league right now, they play in a format like this for the rest of their careers. How do we measure them against history? I don't think that modern day sports fans do that in the same way. We just already moved the goalposts for these arguments. Like, look at what do we do that with still? Like, when do we need to use the regular season games as an argument for greatness or as an argument for comparing players?
Yeah, I see. I get both sides of it because I like the consistency of, all right, we're 82 games. That's what an NHL season is. First off, Brian Burke has also mentioned that as much as he would like to see the regular season shortened, once you've done this, you can only add games. Like, the owners are not agreeing to ever have less games. But I like it just from, a season's 82 games, a quick eye test check of stats, that sort of thing. But realistically, we already suck at comparing eras in sports. Like, it's already, you know, really impossible to measure,
right,
you know, what Ovi means against the Gretzky era, means against the dead puck era, means against whatever. We really struggle with that as is, and even point per game metrics don't help because you have to, figure out what the average for goals in a game was at that time. We were really bad at it. So as I get older, I move to a more pragmatic line of thinking, which is that what's going to make the product better? Like, let's not worry about historical context. And if it is a 68-game season, if guys are going to play harder, if it's going to be a better product, if it's going to result in an exciting play-in series for more teams and a better way to find a true champion, then that's what makes sense. And I think we do spend a little, as much as I like the 82 games historically, I think we bend the knee a little bit too much to the history books when we're already bad at sifting through what they mean.
No, that's the biggest takeaway for me from basically all of this, is leagues are going to have to come back better and they're going to have to come back smarter, and that the corners that they occupy are always going to be important because they're live, right? And live events are always going to have now much more importance to, like, think about your cable package right now. Like, in terms of, I don't know how you've spent time during quarantine, but yeah, I still will put on TV from time to time, but you know when I put it on, it's that it's around live events. That's actually when I watch other programming, is when I'm waiting the 30 minutes to watch the UFC start on Saturday night. When I'm watching a show after a Bundesliga match because I'm like, oh, well, I'm already sitting here in front of the TV. Maybe I'll watch something else. Maybe I'll allow them to... Like, that's it. That's the name of the game. So how do you make sure that you keep
apathy.
People... Right, no, but sometimes, you know what? I still also think it's nice for the TV to decide, you know? Like, I don't want to spend 3 hours on Netflix every time.
Take this off my plate, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, just let... Oh, wow. You know what I love is that TV...
Coronation
they put on
Street.
A lot of... No, television, cable does a really good job of picking movies. Like, Idiocracy was on the other night,
yeah.
And so was U.S. Marshals. And I was like, damn, yeah. Some bangers out here. The problem is that the commercial lengths of movies on cable television are so egregious. It's actually, I've timed them out. It's really close to as much of the movie you watch, and then they go to break, and then they run commercials that are as long as the movie portion that you just watched. So, like, yeah. You have to record them, or you have to pause it for a little while and then come back to it, and you think, okay, well, I've paused for 30 minutes. There certainly won't be 30 minutes of commercials to make me catch. Oh, there are. Okay. I don't know who is able to sustain these things or who can watch a movie on television without having at least part of the commercial breaks you can fast forward through. But how do you make sure that you keep an audience, or that you not only keep an audience, but you grow an audience? It's by adjusting to the times, and it's by adjusting and realizing that you are competing against a world of content like we've never seen before. And what we've just had happen over the last couple of months is that a lot of people who are used to their habits, who are used to their rituals and routines of just watching cable and watching sports, and that consumed a lot of their time, they've gone out and they've looked for ulterior means. They've probably discovered podcast series. They've probably discovered stuff that they enjoy on YouTube. They've probably discovered either Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime. You know what I mean? Like, they've gone to these things and said, ah, this is actually a lot easier than I thought. Oh, I actually figured out how to use my smart TV and put some of these streaming services on. Oh, actually, I like this show. Maybe I'll like more shows like this, that you might not be coming back to the same group. You might not be coming back to the same audience. You're going to have to figure out how to keep people engaged. And for me, I don't think that you can ask people to watch 82 regular season hockey games in a league where, yeah, on a given night, most of the teams are pretty even, and we might be expanding playoffs, so you're going to have 82-game regular season slog to get to the postseason. Like, I don't see how it works. I don't see how it keeps people's attention. And I don't see how you can learn about the entire league. Like, this has been a problem for hockey, too, is that it's become so regional, right? Like, everybody, it's like baseball now, where you follow your team, and you're so exhausted by just following your one team because you have to watch all 82 regular season games that you're less incentivized to stay up and watch a Western Conference game or on an off night, tune in to see a different team from around the league.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I stand on that, and because my perspective is so muddled by what I do. You know, like, there cannot be enough Leafs and Islanders games for me. Like, that's like event viewing. Like my wife has it on our like family calendar. Like, Justin's out of commission tonight. Like, the Leafs are playing or whatever. And that's just like part of my life that I enjoy. So I try to dial back into the head of someone who doesn't do this for a living. And I don't know, man. Like, I feel like what's nice about playing 82 games is that, let's say you have a free night to watch hockey, like, it's nice that there's a game on. Like, it's nice that it often lines up. I feel like if you have a sparser calendar, the odds of just catching a game when you happen to have a free night get thinner. I don't know if it's good for the game, man. I know that the quality could be better, but that's a tough decision, tough to know how you make that revenue model work. But it's a worthwhile argument, and I'm sure it's something they discuss.
But we agree that the league, for the most part, is that every team is pretty close and every team is pretty similar, right? Like, that you're,
well,
like,
yeah, what it's a tiered, yeah, league, no doubt. Like, you can be in one of basically five tiers as a team, as I see it. And there's
exactly,
and within those tiers, it's tough to find separation.
So I just think that more so than other sports, you can talk yourself into matchups. That you can say, yeah, okay, well, I'm getting this team tonight, but actually they're pretty good too, so maybe I'll end up watching them. The way that I try to relate it in terms of thinking about a regular sports fan is how much of my time it consumes. And I know that, again, it's my job, but for me to follow all the sports teams and for me to follow just the ones in the city of Toronto is an basically everyday event. Like, it's very rare for me just to get a night off where I'm not watching sports. And so it's like, is the everyday casual person doing this exact same thing? Or are you trying to make sure that what you have is, because it's a little bit more sparse, because it's not every single day, that you do care a little bit more, that you're like, oh, it feels a little bit more like football. There's an urgency to watch. Like, football has 16 games, well, yeah, now 17 moving forward. But you know what I never
that
miss?
Makes
and you know
it
what
event
I never
viewing.
Feel exhausted?
Yeah.
Exactly. I never feel exhausted, yeah, by watching these things. So try and find a way to make
UFC.
Your sport have a little bit more of an event feel to it, that, oh man, this feels big, that if you're only playing 68 regular season games, that, you know, maybe you're not playing the Habs 25 times a year if you're a Leafs fan, so it actually feels like it matters more when these two teams play on a Saturday night. You know what I mean?
What's interesting, and I would be curious to hear the business arguments of this, is like, who do you think the league prioritizes? It's base or the fringe fans? You know, like,
fringe.
Who are they trying? Right. Which I don't know with hockey that's necessarily the right answer. And I feel that, and I know that's the direction the NHL has moved. And you see the move to, regions where, you know, hockey isn't necessarily the biggest sport and try to grow the game. And I appreciate all that. And I think it's important too. But I just feel like hockey has such a hardcore, dedicated fan base that you can do well by. I guess these are tough business decisions. Like, who are you really trying to appeal to? The NHL, to me, feels like a league that should maybe try to cater to its base a little bit more than the fringe fans.
Is it just not too much to ask,
Very
though?
Politics speak, isn't it?
Yeah, but I just think, is it like really that hard not to do both? Like, to say, hey, we're going to expand and we're going to alter our product, but we're not going to completely piss off our base. I just think that if you're a hockey fan, if you're a diehard hockey fan, if you were especially just raised on the sport and you've watched it, that even the people who you meet who are like, I don't really watch hockey anymore, they're the ones who are texting me whenever there's a big game and being like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, you'll be back. Like, that's the thing. You're here. You're here forever. So I think that it's important to make sure that you keep certain traditions of the game. And I don't think that, all of a sudden you should be doing, changing the diameters of the nets, all this different stuff that they proposed. But altering a schedule and making sure that your product is better and making sure that, more of an audience is engaged with you longer. I just don't see the downside to that. Because again, what is going to matter the most moving forward is going to be television product to me. Is how do you sell this as a TV product? How can you get as much possible for whatever streaming service or cable company comes to you? And that's the new long-term play. Do that. So, I don't know. I still think that's it. I think it's having as many teams engaged and it's making your games feel more like events the way that they do like the in the NFL or for a big matchup in the NBA. Yeah. So I want to talk to you about...
There's something to that.
Yeah. There was just no real end point there for me to take a break. I always feel weird when we have a conversation. Still as a radio guy, especially when I'm just doing A-Chair for the first time when Ben is gone, that I'm like, all right, now I have to be the one who pivots into you don't talk, but then it's you'd never be having a conversation with me on the phone. I'd be like, all right, when you have to find that natural endpoint to just hang up the phone? That's what you have to do every single segment and every single block, and it's never smooth. So that's what's happening right now.
I'm glad it's not me.
Yeah, we're taking a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Sabres and Jack Eichel. It's a good show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So again, Justin Bourne has a column up right now on Sportsnet.ca. 10 reactions to the NHL's return to play plan and draft lottery. And I like your work because you can astutely observe that the Buffalo Sabres are bad and that they have been bad.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite insightful by you to point that out. Hey guys, did you notice that the Sabres aren't here? That they're not in it? But this coincides with Jack Eichel's comments, which I'm sure you've seen, right? At this point? Mm-hmm. About being in Buffalo? Okay, so I'm going to read them for
I wrote about them for a not-to-be-named other location yesterday.
You don't write for anyone other than Sportsnet, sir. That's just a fact, right?
Right.
So this is Jack Eichel. Quote, look, I'm fed up with losing, and I'm frustrated. It's been a tough couple of months. It's been a tough 5 years. I want to win the Stanley Cup every time I start the season. I'd be lying if I'm not getting frustrated with the way things are going. End quote. That again is Jack Eichel. So normally in this sport, you would look at a guy like Jack Eichel and say, man, hey, this is just expressing his opinion. This is somebody who signed for $10 million a year on an 8-year deal, which I think he's in year two? This is the second season of that extension.
Of it. Yeah.
Right. So, hey, Jack Eichel, this is what you kind of signed up for. But I don't really think it is. Buffalo was supposed to be kind of moving in this different direction. And I'm starting to wonder if this is going to derail the Sabres and if we're actually going to see something in hockey that we've seen in basketball before, which is player empowerment and the way that hockey players are perceived in terms of wanting a big deal but having the ability to go to management and say, yeah, trade me. And they're like, wait, Jack, we gave you an 8-year, $10 million deal. We gave you what you wanted. This is part of the bag. And he says, yeah, I don't really care. Figure it out. Get me out of here. I want this to be done. That this could actually be a real shift. That we thought the Tavares thing was big because of free agency. But in actuality, what it's going to end up being is that guys start looking at their spots. And even once they've signed deals, going against the grain in culture. And if a guy like Eichel happens to be maybe the pioneer of this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's I was thinking about that too, that exact thing in terms of player empowerment. And right now you have a three-year entry-level deal, and then you're a restricted free agent. Generally, you have to play in the year for seven seasons before you have control over your own career. What we know about player primes in the NHL is that they're statistically significantly younger than I think most people assume they are. I think if you ask the average hockey fan, what is a prime age hockey player? They'll be like, 28. You know, 27, 28, a guy who's been in the league for a while, isn't old yet. And it's like, nope, he's on the other side of the curve at that age already. And I know that's terrifying to believe, but you get some of the best
depressing for every
NHL
person who plays in a men's league.
Hey, 20, you're actually on the downside of your life. Yeah, yeah. 28 year old. So a lot of these 22, 23 year olds have their biggest years in their careers, and that's when they have no say over where they play. And often, if you are a great player like Eichel, you've been drafted to a bad team, and there's no guarantee that team is going to get out of the hole, and some of our best players toil away in obscurity. And it's bad. It's bad for the NHL. And my contention has been that the NBA also has a lot of player control, but the players, the individual players, are able to affect outcomes so significantly. An individual player can, that they can bring mediocre teams into the playoffs and potentially deeper into the playoffs. You know, LeBron has dragged some very mediocre teams to championship series in the past. Mm-hmm. So a guy like Eichel just had a Hart Trophy season. His team is still terrible. Like, Connor McDavid was the best player in the NHL last season, and I think the Oilers missed playoffs by 17 points. Like, there's just not the ability for these guys to drag bad teams somewhere. So it's an issue for the league. How do you get these star players in bigger games so you can market them more, so fans can watch them more? It's just the game of hockey doesn't lend itself to them being able to do it themselves.
My thought when I see stuff like this, though, just in terms of players using this break to think about stuff, right, is that if I'm a player right now, I'm realizing that my value is even greater than what I originally thought it was. Like, look at what the landscape is without live sports on TV. And I was thinking about this with the UFC earlier, that a guy like John Jones, I don't know how much you know about the sport, is vindicating his light heavyweight title, and he's ready to have the UFC terminate his contract, and he'll walk away unless he gets...
Vacating it, right?
Yeah, right. That he'll unless he properly gets compensated. And I feel like if I'm Jack Eichel, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, well, sports don't work without stars. That's what we're figuring. Like, you can put the KBO on TV, and Major League Baseball players, they're not worried about it. They're like, cool. No. Cool story. I know it's on at 3 a.m., but people are not going to watch sports without stories and without compelling figures. And if you're Jack Eichel, hey, guess what? You happen to be one of them. You happen to be a compelling figure. You have more gravitas. You have more ability to say, hey, I would like a trade and I would like out of here. And I think that there's a couple of things. One is that there's a shift in terms of age and your peer group, in that you want something earlier in life. You feel like you are putting in the work to deserve it, that your peers are not going to look at you the same way as just a whiny snot because you want to go to a different situation. Like, I don't think that that's the same way as it used to be. Like, even just look at how culture has shifted from where we saw LeBron James go to the Heat or Kevin Durant to the Warriors to where it is now, when a guy like Kawhi Leonard goes and joins Paul George with the Clippers.
Anthony Davis is a great example.
Exactly. It's just like, this is just kind of the status quo. That I wonder if it just becomes the same way in hockey eventually, that you're actually going to have a lot more limited shelf life with stars while also having to acquiesce to, their demands. And that these guys are going to use this time and say, yeah, you know what? I actually want more of a situation. I'm not going to have the same pressure from my peer group. I'm not going to have the same pressure. I'm sure some of it from social media. Like, again, there's always going to be trolls. But for the majority, I think a lot of the loud voices are going to say, well, Jack Eichel put in his time in Buffalo and they're not getting any better in another season like this. What do you expect? That's 6 years. That's his prime of his career, as you just outlined, that we're getting smarter as sport fans. That if he wants to accomplish his goal and his dreams, he's going to have to do it somewhere else. That it just... there's a pathway here for athletes to just simply say, yeah, we're not doing this the same if we don't want it to be. Mm-hmm. We could end up actually having a sport where player transactions and guys wanting out of places become a little bit closer to the other sports leagues.
Yeah, well, you know, what made me kind of get started on this is last week, Rick Nash joined us on Hockey Central. And so in before talking to him, I'm going through his resume and looking at his career stats. And, you know, his career reminded me a little of Jay Bouwmeester, where he played like 800 games before he finally went somewhere that was a playoff team. And, you know, and he went to the Stanley Cup final, you know, and had a little bit of run once he finally made that change and said, I've given Columbus enough time here. And, you know, you've seen people have success when they say, I've had enough of this. I've given this team enough time. And I kind of feel like I'm with you on that, man. Like, at what point, when you're a star player, do you make that ask? And I think you make that ask once you've gone to the team and said, we need to be doing X, Y, and Z. If the team is working to do the right things for you and trying to pay free agents and trying to make trades and it's not working, I think you owe them more than if they're just kind of shrugging their shoulders at it. But, yeah, there is a level where it's like, okay, it's been enough years. I've given you enough of my time. You've proven you can't do it. If you're the Sabres, who's coming to save the day? I know your boy Dylan Cousins is on the way, but then what? You know, like, well, I mean, if I'm Eichel, I'm pretty close to wanting out.
Dylan Cousins
is a lot. He is,
a lot of people are saying potentially next McDavid, and if not, better version of McDavid.
I heard Super McDavid they were going to
call. Yeah, exactly, exactly. knock it. I think he's already in pen for the next Team Canada, whatever the hell that's actually going to happen. International hockey, man. Like that. Actually, that just just random thought is that was the one thing I left out when I was talking about the playoff or the new format for hockey is that if you have less games, it actually makes it easier to play an international schedule. And you also make it more appealing. And, yeah, maybe it's something that you don't have to go to the Olympics for, but all of a sudden the World Cups of hockey, I can never remember what exactly we call it here, and it's a Sportsnet property, and I feel bad. But, hey, the product kind of stunk, so I don't really feel that bad about it.
Like, World Cup, we had it.
Yeah, okay. It was we had Team Europe face Canada in the final. Not exactly a smash hit. Not exactly a smash hit event. When the best thing was the weird U21 team or the U23 team, but either way, if I'm Jack Eichel, I'm asking out of here. Do you think Jack Eichel is a Buffalo Sabre 2 seasons from now? So to start the 2022 season, which oh my God, I can't believe that's a real time. That's close. 2022 Jack Eichel Buffalo Sabre. Yes or no?
I would say yes, because it's hockey and no one ever does anything. That's the only reason. But I think he would be within his rights if he made a stink by then and said, this isn't working, I want to go. I don't think I'd judge him one bit.
Yeah, especially, okay, if you expand to 24 teams and he still doesn't make it a year later with another 24-team playoff. And
dude, the Sabres started the season 9-2-1 this year. They were 9-2-1. They only played 69 games. They missed a 24-team playoff.
Yep.
How does it happen?
If that happens again, if they're not able to do that again, this isn't exactly like the guy is living in, you know, California, right? He's not living in anonymity in a place where there's incredible weather and that when he walks the rink in his flip-flops and then he hits the beach and he has his nice off-season. This is a guy who is living in Buffalo, and I just wonder if it's the right mix of player, situation, and market that is going to actually push him out. So I'm going to say if he doesn't make the playoffs next year, he's gone, that this is actually the warning. And, yeah, I wonder if we would be having the same conversations about Connor McDavid if the Oilers season had gone ass up, you know? Like, if
yes.
Well, if this...
The most mad people have ever been at me in my media career was when last March, I was asked if I thought Connor McDavid wanted out of Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I was feeling particularly honest. I said, he probably does. He probably does. Like, not that he's going – I didn't say he was going to ask out or that I thought he should. I thought that when he laid his head on his pillow at night and he's in year four of his career and the Oilers are about to miss the playoffs by a billion points again – I thought that, yeah, he probably did want to be somewhere else. And I think you're right, that had this season gone terribly for Edmonton, things might be mighty tense for someone who can feel his career kind of slipping away. Again, not playing in, you know, California or something.
Here's the thing that fans should know, and then we'll take a break, is usually the very best players on the planet care more about finding a way to win than they do about loyalty to the place that drafted them. That's all. That's generally the case. That's all. Is that, hey, your place might be great, your place might be fine. Of course, they would like to primarily win there because that is always the nicest story. That is the nicest way to wrap things up, but not at the cost of wasting an entire career. And that's just where I think Jack Eichel's at and is where Connor McDavid could be. When we come back, we'll wrap up.
And I would like to further start. I know. I just want to say further to the point of like it sounded like taking a shot at Buffalo or Edmonton. If I'm in Toronto and it's cold in the winter and the media are on me here, I want the heck out of here too. You know, if there's no success being had. So it's not about the city so much as the greater all, overall point about you got to win when you're a star. Carry on.
Yeah. Yeah. Austin Matthews wanted a 5-year deal. He didn't ask for an 8-year one. Like, let that.
Right. Exactly.
It's not just about getting another payday when he's younger. It's about where he might want to get that payday. I told you it's harder for me to throw the brakes, and you interrupted me and made it difficult just so that you could kowtow to Edmonton and make, oh, Edmonton, I just want to make sure that you don't get mad at me again. I'm going to ruin JD's day. Thanks for that. Let me come back. It's more show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Couple more minutes here with Borny. So nothing too serious. I just want to know what a guy with limited time and a heavy work schedule and a busy life is doing for downtime right now in terms of content that you are taking in for fun. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to like give someone that you can either talk to a television show about a television show or a movie or a podcast series. Like you got to be doing something. You got to be doing something well, other than just family, 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 ice cream, depression, sleep. Like there's got to be something else. In there.
That's not necessarily true. It's not necessarily true. You don't have to be doing something else. However, I've always been jealous when I heard people talk about like the more iconic shows like Sopranos, The Wire, whatever. So I dip my toe into The Wire. I'm all in. It is now, I'm in the fifth season, and it is already the best show I've ever watched. It is as good as the hype, and it holds up except for two things. The technology is unbelievable. You watch the first season, they're on typewriters. They're typewriters. So that kind of blew my mind. And then the season five is kind of falling apart for me a little bit here. So, other than that, it's been absolutely stunning. Great show.
Listen, season five is a little difficult because they deviate from McNulty's like principal belief so much, and they just kind of turn him into a different character. It's one of the biggest mistakes that the show makes, if not the only real significant mistake the show makes. But yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth between what my favorite season is. I think my favorite, the most entertaining season is 3, but the most compelling season is 4. And you just finished 4. My question is, did you cry during season 4? Because I think you did. I don't see how it's possible not to at least have a situation where if you're watching it with your wife, if she's crying and she's like, you're not crying, and your throat is just on fire and you're like, no. Like, I don't think that's a possibility.
I think when I watch shows alone, it's like I can watch stand-up comedy by myself and never make a sound and think it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Yeah. Like, I guess I sort of output emotion for other people. So I don't think I outwardly did cry, but I felt it, man. I felt it.
Are you watching it alone? So you're watching it without the wife?
Yeah.
Okay. That's actually unbelievably interesting because I know with a lot of married couples, especially right now, that they say they don't have a show. They have a shared show. You actually are the rare breed that has his own show. You have your own thing in that home. Congratulations to you, sir.
That's why I tell you I eat like a 2-liter of ice cream every week. I put my son to bed. It's like 8:30. My wife goes to upstairs for bed with the newborn. That's like my ice cream in the wire window. It's my little time, buddy.
I also eat an ice cream to myself once a week, and it has nothing to do with children or those stresses. Just like I like ice cream. It's really tasty, and I don't really know what the cutoff is in a pint of like, where are you supposed to stop? What is the regulation amount here where I feel like it should have markings on the inside, like stop. And then a second one that's like, actually stop now. Like no more past this line for one sitting. If this is one sitting, you've gone too far.
The good news is you eat two avocados a day, and I'm eating hemp hearts. So since we're going to live forever, we're fine to eat as much ice cream on top of that. So
exactly. I just bought flax seeds to put in my smoothie. So that's basically just burning up all
eternal
that ice
life.
Cream. No problem. This is something that I haven't talked about on the show. Actually, I did. I talked about it with Ben a little bit, which is just like I feel like a lot of people in quarantine or in the social distancing era are doing a lot better in terms of diet and some with exercise just because you have more downtime. But that you're still living in these like hard extremes where one moment you're eating really well, you're exercising, you're taking care of yourself. And then all of a sudden, flash forward, you're eating that pint of ice cream with a side of Doritos in bed at midnight, and you're up until 3 a.m. Like, that's it's either one or the other.
I've been, like, fixating on a thing that a trainer once said to me, which I think is pretty common advice, but you can't out-train a bad diet. You know, you can do as much work as you want, and it's still very good for you, but, like, if you're trying to, like, change your body physique or whatever, if you still eat like a schlub, you're going to look like a schlub. And for me, it's like I'm running, like, 4 or 5 days a week, like, 7K a time, and I am, like, not looking great. I am eating, I'm eating, you know, nachos and salsa at night and ice cream, and it's so I am not – I'm doing stuff, but I'm not outrunning my bad diet.
See, this is what sucks about being athletic and young at one point is that when you have that, you have your like young person body where you could eat all the trash and you could exercise and you would look shredded. Like my summer where I was most – everyone knows their summer where they were most in shape. And mine, I spent that summer drinking beer basically every night, smoking cigarettes, and I think I ate Doritos every single night as well, like, or at least every second night, and I didn't eat a healthy meal the entire summer. But if you see pictures of me, you'd be like, oh my god, were you a CrossFit athlete? It's like, nope, I ate Doritos and smoked cigs and drank a ridiculous amount of beer and highballs that were probably 95% Coca-Cola. That's what I did every single night. But it trained me for it trained me for this screw up, which is like, I can get away with this. Like, no, you can't. You're over 30. That's over now, bud. Sorry to tell you. You got to run. You got to eat well. You got to lift. You got to do all those things in concert or nothing's going to happen. Thanks for doing this, man. Enjoy the rest of The Wire. And yeah, I'll tell you this. The second time you watch The Wire, you're not going to believe this. You have to, because it's actually better than the first time you watch The Wire. That's my tip.
What a show.
That's my tip to The Wire fans out there.